Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. We have Jonathan Schroyer on the line. He is an author in one of our upcoming books and also a podcast host on our network. I'm thrilled to have Jonathan on the show. He's also the Chief Customer Experience Innovation Officer over at Arise Gaming. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, Adam. I always love to be on your shows and listen to all the different viewpoints from the other guests you have. So it's an honor to be here.
Man, Jonathan, I'm listening to your intro and it gets longer and longer. I'm like, come on, podcast, book, like what's next? At some point, I obviously worked in Arise Gaming, but you got a lot going on and we're thrilled to work with you and excited to go further into the book, the podcast, Arise Gaming, what you're doing there. I know you also have some other things going on. So we'll talk about all these things, Immortal Studios. But before we do that, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So Jonathan, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Jonathan, what mission matters to you?
It's pretty simple for me, Adam. It's the same one I shared last time. Is when I was a young boy living in Texas, I grew up in a small town. I love technology. As I graduated high school, there were not opportunities for me to engage in tech and have tech jobs. So naturally, I went to school and I moved to the tech hub. And 20 years later, I started a company called Efficium Labs, which was later acquired by Arise, where the whole goal was to put a tech job in every community and give the individuals that live in those communities the opportunity to live where they want to live and have a purposeful job to get excitement and grow and learn in their career. So that's the mission that matters most to me.
Fantastic. Let's start towards the beginning. Like, how did you know you wanted to be an entrepreneur? Like, what was it for you?
I think all throughout my career, I was more about security because I grew up under the poverty line with my family in Texas. And so the first part of my career, I didn't know I was going to be an entrepreneur because I was worried about security. So I was worrying about, hey, how do I make sure that I have money in the bank for 6 months, for 12 months, for 18 months, and so forth? What ended up happening is as I joined these larger, wonderful companies, I started to see that I was different. Like I would say, well, why don't we do this? Or what about this? Or have we thought about this? And sometimes that would create tension. And and what I realized is big companies are amazing out there to help the world run. But to reach my full potential, I had to break out and do my own thing and trust myself. And that's what I always say about founders is like, if you believe in yourself, then you're going to accomplish anything that's in front of you as a founder. And so later on in my career, when we moved to San Francisco, I was like, I should give this entrepreneur thing a shot. So I started off with Postmates, being their head of CS and their VP of ops, they're, you know, kind of taking them from, you know, 10 markets to 40 markets and so forth. And then I got the itch and I was like, hey, I could do this. I could found my own company. That's what I did. But for me, it was all about growing and stretching myself, taking my ideas, believing in it and bring people along for the ride and ultimately driving value to the market.
And what I like about your story is that you built on your skill set. Like there's different ways that people obviously enter being an entrepreneur, entrepreneurship. Some people are accidental entrepreneurs like myself. They didn't really know they were going to be an entrepreneur and then they ended up being one. Some people were born entrepreneurs like, I can never work for anybody. I got, you know, I just can't do it. Like it's not my thing. And then other individuals, but your earlier years, it's almost like you went through kind of an apprenticeship of sort, like in learning different things and building on skill sets. Am I off on that?
No, I think it's right. I mean, one of the things I did when I was 21 is I built a 20-year plan. And as part of that 20-year plan—
Hold on. You were 21. You built a 20-year plan.
It's the way my mind thinks. I know it's different. My wife often says that I'm a little bit different. But I built this 20-year plan. And so I set goals for personal, for professional, as well as like, you know, physical, mental, social, spiritual, all those types of things. But what the goal that I had was like, how do I get to a position by the time I'm 41? To be a CEO. And so what I did is along with, you know, the security component that I mentioned earlier, I was like, what roles do I need to have along the way to position myself to be a CEO? And so oddly enough, that kind of the pathway wasn't as straight and linear. It was up and down and around. But when I was 41, that's when I started Efficium Labs and I founded it as the CEO. And having been in finance, having been in operations, delivery, having worked in training, having engaged and worked with HR, all these key fundamental roles to run a company, I positioned myself well. And then I found a founder who complimented me where I wasn't the strongest so that we could run a company from the get-go super successfully. And we, I think it was in our second month, we were profitable. And the first 2 years, we made $10 million in gross revenue. So I really do think that having built that plan out, and it worked for me, it doesn't work for everybody, but having built that 20-year plan out and sticking to it and checking in with it positioned me to where I could launch a FISTEAM and have a successful run at it.
It's an amazing story, and one of execution, one of planning. And I love that you emphasize the planning. I mean, I've interviewed thousands of people, and I don't think I've heard somebody say they've done a 20-year plan at the age of 21. I think the age part is extremely sophisticated or important to kind of highlight the age part, because most, when I was 21, I think I might have a 5-year, but I was not going for 20. But it makes sense, though. And along the way, I'm guessing that maybe some of the things that you put in that plan didn't maybe turn out exactly like you wanted to, but you adjust. Right? Like you make different things based off of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to think about it as broad goals and milestones and not as acute, you know, acute milestones and acute goals. If you say, I'm going to do this,
that would drive you crazy, right?
Yeah, it'd drive you crazy. But if you say broadly, I need to learn about finance. Broadly, I need to learn about operations. Broadly, you know, I need to learn more about emotional intelligence. Broadly, I need to understand my own identity, who I am and who I'm not. Those types of things, if you set up those broad guiding principles and those core values, then I think that helps you to stay within the realm of achievement where you don't beat yourself down for saying, oh, I guess I failed. I personally don't believe in failure. I think Nelson Mandela said it best when he said, we win or we learn, we never lose. And I think there's a lot of learning that happened in that 20 years and a lot of winning. And I think that got me to the position where I had the confidence and the gumption, a word that we don't hear very often, the fire in the belly, to be willing to go after and start a company.
That is a word we don't hear very often. I want to jump around a bit. Let's fast forward a bit. So FISTEAM Labs, like how did you know, which has now been acquired, right, by Arise Gaming, but how did you know at that time that like, okay, this is the idea. This is the one that I want to go after.
So I was sitting on my armchair in the family room, and I was thinking about the future of service. I closed my eyes kind of in a meditation state, because I find that's when you can be your most creative, when you're relaxed and meditating. I envisioned a world that was globally connected and that had bidirectional value between the hubs and the nodes inside of the world. I opened my eyes and I looked down and I saw my router, my internet router, right? And immediately what I recognized was that was the future of service. This internet router sends data all throughout my house. It's connected. There's a main hub. There's nodes. And then people use it. And depending on how well the speed packet is, the download, the usage of it, they get value from it, right? And then and there's bidirectional value between the network and the user. And so I thought, well, what if you build a network where there's bidirectional value between the client, between the worker, and between technology? And I was like, I think that's the future of service. And that's what the market needs. And if you can prove that, as well as prove that customer service and customer experience is a profitable experience, then I think that's where the magic is. That kind of ties into the book that we'll talk about in a little bit, is asking yourself simple questions or thinking about simple concepts and then figuring out how to build a business model around it. And so when I came up with that idea, then I said, well, let me go to the market and test this out with people I know. And so I started talking to some people, and they're like, hey, I want to hear more about them. And so we have 5 customers in 2 months. We were profitable in the 2-month time period, because this, it was the right time. It was pre-pandemic, but it was the right time for folks that were really interested in a new way to think about service, a way to differentiate their product, and a way to really build their muscles inside of the company.
And spoiler alert for those that don't already know, A Future of Service is also the name of Jonathan's podcast. So that's where it comes from. It comes full circle. So now you're going a little bit further down the path. Okay, so FISTEAM Labs starts. It's profitable year one. Like, what was your execution, or what was the plan for growing that originally to like to where it was at now, ultimately before being acquired? Well, how did that look?
It's an interesting story. A lot of founders might have an idea of like, oh, let's go be $1 billion unicorn.
Yeah.
Or, oh, let's go make $100 million.
Yeah.
Scott and I had a different.
Sounds good, right? It's like, it sounds good. Like, let's go do it.
Sounds great. But Scott and I had a slightly different point of view. So our point of view was, let's build a sustainable company that brings value to everyone that's engaged with it, that is based off a set of core values. So we set five or six core values at the beginning of the company. And we made a commitment, no matter what we changed in the company, we'd always stick to those core values. For us, that's how we started the company. We didn't know if the company was going to be a $10 million company, a $100 million company. That was what the experiment was about. Wow. And so as we continued to grow and we brought in people that believed in the vision, people that believed in the values, as the business grew, it grew much faster than we ever expected. As we needed to pivot post-pandemic, it was easier to pivot because it was all of our decisions were based off our core values and based off our people and trusting our people, so that we could then pivot our people to where we needed to go from a market standpoint. So the underlying theme of bidirectional value, the underlying theme of profitability and customer experience remains, but the services and the products that we needed to pivot and change to post-pandemic were a little bit different. And so from our perspective, we kind of grew much faster than we ever expected to. And so we got to a point 2 years in where we're like, wow, this is amazing. The market really loves this. But in order for us to scale this further, we need help from a funding standpoint, an expertise standpoint, you know, a networking standpoint. And so we reached out to, we did our fundraising rounds. We magically, three companies reached out and wanted to acquire us at the same time. And so we really thought about, like, where do we go next, where we can align our core values, align our business and scale and grow. And so we talked to a lot of companies and we settled in with Arise Virtual Solutions, which is the parent company that owns Arise Game. And what we found with them was they invented remote work back in 99, and they were a US-centric company at the time where we were global. And they were across tons of other amazing verticals like hospitality, finance, tourism. You look at tax, a bunch of other areas, you know, that they're in. And we were really focused on gaming and consulting. But they had the same core values that we had. They had the same ethos of the future of work. And they generally had the same culture. We felt like it would be a great marriage to come together where one plus one truly does equal four or five. And so that's what we did in November 19th of last year, was we brought the two companies together and we've just had an amazing ride together. Not only seeing the kind of synergies that we could help each other and we could grow from each other, super great talented people inside of the company. I could list off, you know, 20, 30 people that we've worked with there. But inherently, when you think about the future of work, I did a survey this past week. And what I found in my survey is 12% of people want to go back to work in the office. The future of work is hybrid or remote. And Arise invented that in 1999. Tangentially, we did it in the gaming space, thinking about future of work, future of payments, decentralization of work and wealth. And then we brought our stories together last year. And then the future is ahead of us. And the world is determining where they want to work and how they want to work. Arise is there to help them be successful in that way. And so I think that's kind of the amazingness of the story when groups come together like that. If that makes
sense. It's an excellent story. And I know the thought that goes into, based off of what you've built, to entrusting. And then, as you mentioned, your worth, those synergies, the synergies that existed and what you're able to do together in that whole. I think it's something special, but I have to ask. So what is it like trying to kind of, you know, mesh these two companies together? And I just mean from a high level, because it's hard. You built something, you know, that's working. Yeah. And then you have something else you're plugging it into. Like, it's not simple. Like, on a high level, what's that like?
I think you think about it in three ways. One, the success of an acquisition is based on how the two companies are willing to work together and how they're willing to partner. In some cases, compromise and support each other's kind of new shared vision. The ultimate failure is if one of the companies aren't able to do that. That's why you'll see, you know, 60, 70% of acquisition mergers tend to fail or not work out, because it's down to the people. And so I think that's one thing from the get-go, where we sat down with the leadership team on both sides and said, okay, how do we ensure that this can be a success? And where do we want to not break each other initially? And where do we want to augment each other initially? And then longer term, how do we integrate and get that synergistic value? So I think having that integration plan, understanding from the beginning stages that everything's not going to work perfectly, there's going to be bumps, but let's work together and have the leadership team on both sides. So I think that's really critical. And there will be bumps. There will always be bumps. We've had bumps.
Of course. And there's bumps in regular business. I mean, there's always going to be bumps.
So you go in with that. I think the second thing to think about is there's the things that you know that you don't know. And so those are the things that you start to talk about, you start to brainstorm, and you figure out. And then there's the things you don't know you don't know. And what that means is, like, anytime you bring two companies together, they're just things you didn't know. Like, it's like when you get married, there's, no matter how long you date, you know, whoever your partner is, when you get married, there's just things that come out that you didn't know, right? And it's the same case in a merger. And so it's how you respond to what you know and how you collaborate, partner, you build that trust, you build that respect. Those are kind of the three elements that I think make a successful merger and acquisition. And I think that's what's helped us to be successful, is navigating all of those, strong people on both sides, willing to partner together, sometimes having a little fire in the belly and passion, sometimes having cooler minds, but figuring it out and then partnering together and making the magic happen. And that's what I feel really confident we've done with Arise Virtual Solutions and Arise Gaming, is we've been able to do that, and we will continue to be able to do that. But those are the kind of three tips that I would give people as they think about merging companies.
So I want to skip around a little bit here. So let's get into the book. For everybody watching this, by the way, just so you know, we're not going to do a deep dive today. We're still in editing and we're still working out some of the content. But don't worry, we'll be bringing Jonathan back on the line when the book is out and live, and then we'll do a nice deep dive as well. But just to get us kicked off, Jonathan, so tell us a little bit more about some of the ideas that you plan on proposing in the book. And of course, just keeping it out there for the audience that this could still change a little bit because we're still in editing.
I mean, I think there's two things that I really am excited about. One thing I kind of touched on a little bit earlier is oftentimes as leaders, whether you're leaders in kind of CX or customer service or whether you're product design, development, wherever you are, marketing, HR, you tend to get rolled into the day-to-day. And you're like, oh, I got to do these 10 items. I got to do this. I got to do this. In the next quarter, we're going to do this. And this is the plan. And you really get into what I like to call the beta state of mind, where you're action than you're doing. But what I find in order to build that future that's going to be valuable for you, valuable for your customer, is you have to get into the alpha state of mind. You have to get into the creative, no boundary state of mind. So in order to do that, what you need to do is you need to stop. You need to segment some time and ask some simple questions, because those simple questions will lead to kind of that next generation of innovation. What I often like to ask people to think about is like, what needs to happen in 5 to 10 years in your industry? And what are the simple questions that you need to ask now to solve for that? And leave it at that. We're not going to give away the book. There's a lot of good content in there.
Yeah, we'll cut it there, but we got more to talk about. So I'm not worried about that. The podcast. Come on, man. When I spoke with Matt Cook, our director agency, and I was like, Jonathan's going to be launching a show on our network. So Mission Matters Podcast Network, for those of you out there that haven't heard, I was thrilled and excited. And then when I saw your topic, I'm like, and then the cover, come on, best cover. If any of the other hosts are listening, not the best cover, but kind of the best cover. The podcast. First off, what was the vision? What was the vision behind the subject matter and the content?
So what I've been seeing in my 20, 25 years in services is that there's an amazing amount of talent that's out there that talks about service, that's passionate about service. But what I find is that they don't hear from each other very often. And I also find that they hear, and when they do hear from each other, it's more in a cute fashion of like service leaders talking to service leaders. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do when I thought about the future of service, I said, let's bring in design leaders. Let's bring in dev leaders. Let's bring in CEOs, CFOs, CMOs, let's bring in services leaders, because that's the entire customer journey, right? Everybody touches the journey. Mm-hmm. It's just not about services. Let's talk to them about what does the future of service look like? And then what's the force multiplier that's going to make that happen? Mm-hmm. And then what are their key insights that they can share with their peers, whether it's peers inside of their own kind of sector or vertical or peers outside of their vertical? Because what I find, you go to conferences, you talk to great leaders that have great ideas, or even thought leaders and influencers, is they're thinking about something that you haven't thought about. And so if the podcast can bring that together, it's a 15-minute segment, so it's easy to do for a run, a little walk that you're doing, you're winding down for the day. It'll give you that thinking time to say, oh, wow, I didn't know that somebody in marketing thought about it that way. I need to talk to that person. Or, oh, that's a great idea. Let me go spend some time thinking about that. So that's the idea behind the podcast, is to help people think differently, to think broadly, and then to determine more acutely how they can apply to get greater value inside of their business.
Now that you're on the other side of the mic and you're talking to others, is there anything that has happened so far? And I know some of the episodes you recorded haven't been released yet, but it's okay. You can spoiler it. Is there anything that surprised you about being the host? Like just experience or feel or anything that you weren't expecting that you're like, oh, wasn't expecting that.
So innately, I have a statement that I love that I didn't come up with, but I love it. It's called people do business with people. And what I have noticed very refreshing way is like 90% of the podcast guests are talking about the importance of people, the importance of engagement, the importance of relationships, the importance of empathy and those types of things. And I find that to be very refreshing. And they talk about it in a slightly different way, right? Though we'll have a podcast that will come out in the next few weeks that talks about every customer wants to be treated like they're a VIP, right? That's a slightly different approach than one that's come out earlier from Mary about the human experience is the future augmented by data. and technology. And, you know, we've got a couple other that are coming out, but it's all surrounded about everything that's on the periphery is going to be value add. But that engagement with the person, those have been the really amazing conversations. And to see the passion that people have, regardless of their position, about making this happen. And then making sure that when you think about the power cores at a company, like who's making the decisions, right? Are we ensuring that the human experience, the people experience is being engraved inside of that decision-making complex and that language is being leveraged? And I think that's been refreshing, and I'm excited to get more and more podcasts. I think we have 10 in the backlog. I've got 6 or 10 more coming up in the next couple of weeks. But it's going to be amazing. So definitely please subscribe to Spotify, subscribe to the Apple, listen to the podcast. I think everyone's really
excited. All right, Jonathan. So my next question is extremely unfair, and I shouldn't ask it, but I always ask podcast hosts, so it is what it is. Any favorite guests so far? And you can add a couple if you want, but just something that sticks out. And the reason I asked this question, by the way, I'm not asking you to pick between your favorites in terms of, but it's like, it's more so along the lines of, I want to give the audience a flavor for the types of individuals you're bringing on that you're interviewing.
I mean, I think, you know, I mean, we've had two that released, so Mary over at Orthix, just an amazing talent with the work that they're doing. And they're thinking about how to use data that augments the human experience. There's just so many amazing things that they're doing with their technology, but also the way that she thinks about the human experience is super. I just can't say enough about Mary. Misa Chien was on recently, and she's the CEO, a co-founder of multiple companies, but she also talks about, you know, the importance of seamless experience and how it's important to remove those barriers. You know, I talked to Ted Rubin of Active Engage just yesterday, and so his is going to be coming on soon. I mean, there's just so many great talented people. Like I said, we've got 10 in the backlog, and I think we're going to have some renowned authors coming on in the next few weeks, some really big names that are really great thought leaders. So it's such a privilege to be the avenue where these great thought leaders, whether they're in business, whether, you know, they're writing books, whether they're influencers, they have a platform to share their thoughts. And so I don't know if I have any favorite, but
doesn't have to be favorite. You gave me exactly what I wanted. I just wanted to get a feel and a flavor for the types of conversations that you're having.
I just love to learn, and all these people are teaching me so that when I go back to my day to day and talk to my team, I can be a better leader. I can, you know, be a better kind of vision caster, as it were.
And I love that you bring that up, because that's the same exact way that we've never talked about this, but that's the same way that I approach my show and I approach these shows is really I'm a learner. Like a lot of the things through the years that we've implemented in our business or otherwise, a lot of 90% of like the, you know, some of the ideas that weren't circling in our company like that, they came from a lot of times interviews. One of the, I feel the privileges of hosting a show is that I get to access individuals and learn from them. And I think on the other side of things, one of the things that makes me happy is that the audience gets to do the same. So it's like, it's almost like you have a co-pilot that is sitting there kind of watching you drink coffee with a thought leader, picking their brain, and then they get to go on this journey with you. And then and through the years, I think that's what makes, in general, that's what makes podcasting so sticky. Like when you find a host and you find a type of conversation that you like hearing or the types of guests, then typically that's when people are going to hit the subscribe button and be longtime co-pilots on that journey of learning. Right. That's the way I think of it. I got to say, so I'm excited. The book's going to be coming out later this year. Going to bring you back on the show, of course. I just have to ask, what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for your career?
Today, a couple of things for me. I mean, we really talked about Arise early on. I think as we go through the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see some amazing work that comes out of Arise, the platform, the network. I mean, I think a couple of things that aren't, you know, well known, but will, you know, come out soon is I love the flexibility of the network, the fact that, you know, 55% of the folks on our network are minority-owned businesses. I think 70 to 75% of the folks are female-owned businesses. So when you think about the future of work and the future of purpose and the future of equity, inclusion, diversity, it's something we at Arise 100% believe in, and the platform is going to enable that decentralization of wealth to these local communities, right? To where people can live where they want to live, do what they want to do, and get opportunities, whether it's in technical services, whether it's in customer services, whether you're thinking in gaming, game testing, player support, community, there's all kinds of opportunities. So there's going to be a component of the next few years, and I'm really jazzed about that and the team over there had a rise in Warburg Pincus and Viptera, the team that's invested in that. I think secondarily, I've started to get a little passion for real estate. You know, growing up, I was a big SimCity Civilization, you know, guy. I used to get in trouble a lot growing up, staying up to 2-3 in the morning. There's a whole story I could probably tell offline about how I had to teach my dad how to delete Civilization because he was so mad at me because I played till 2 in the morning too often. But then I got into real estate and I, you know, bought a few properties. I like being a landlord. I like building and renovating almost like in the SimCity way. So I think there's some fun things there. And then I think you're going to see me a lot more on the speaking circuit, more books planned, you know, and I think more obviously podcasts. We're planning to run that for a few years. And a few other things in my memoirs probably going to come out in the next few years called Becoming Jonathan, that talks through my whole journey of how I found my identity and became myself and so forth. So there's a lot of cool things that is going to come out, but super excited to do all of those things, but really build the future of gaming at Arise as well.
And I'm excited to follow your journey as well, not just by listening to your show, obviously reading your books and learning more, because I think you got a lot going on. I know there's a lot more a story there, and I'm happy to bring that to our audience, of course. If somebody is watching this or listening to this and they want to learn more about Rise Gaming or follow up, anything like that, what's the best way for them to do that?
I think there's three good ways. One is on LinkedIn. I'm at Chief CX Officer or Jonathan Schroyer. You can look me up on Twitter. I'm at Chief CX Officer. Starting in October, I'll be at Chief Gamer on TikTok. So you'll be able to find
me. Come on. I can't wait.
And I'm going to talk about gaming. And I got my son, Little Gamer. He'll pop up every now and again on TikTok. So we got some fun things to do. So we'll talk about all kinds of fun and different things. But reach out to me on any of those platforms.
Didn't I see a video of you on TikTok, Jonathan, talking about they said you couldn't make money playing video games or something like that?
Yeah, it started, but I haven't got to that rhythm yet. I've got 4 or 5 years.
All good. I'm just telling people it's a great video. I saw it and I'm like, I remember it. I mean, I'm on TikTok all the time shooting a video, doing something. And I saw it and I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on over here? So I can't wait to start cranking that content out.
Love it.
Thanks again for coming on the show. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hope you got a lot of value out of this. Hope you learned a lot. If you did, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line, just like Jonathan, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Jonathan, as always, a pleasure. Can't wait till the next time we get to work with each other.
Thank you, good sir. Have a good day.